We're rolling right along here to the religious part of the show. So, as you can tell, there was a lot of country in that first album, wasn't there, Mr. Utley?
Yes.
And to Don Gant, who produced that, and Don Light, as I said, was responsible for it. So, somewhere in the middle of that, I had to go to Atlanta and work at a place called Bistro on West Peachtree. And so, as a performer, when you get off the night, Atlanta was not, let's say, it wasn't as hot Atlanta-ish in those days as it is today. And so the action, there were about two or three clubs out on in the Piedmont area, and then everybody went to the Marriott because it was open for 24 hours, and you could get what was referred to in those days as a soaker. If you'd had a little bit to drink, you wanted some pancakes or a burger or something. You remember that part of living?
Yeah.
So I was sitting there, and I was couldn't help but listening to this conversation of this businessman and the young lady at the booth. So I wrote this song about it, and I went back and I played it in the studio when we recorded it at Glazer Brothers. And I remember Tom Paul Glazer saying, "I can't believe that you actually did this to a country song." And I said, "Well, it's just, you know, Harlan Howard always said country music is three chords and the truth. And so here's the truth." And the great thing about it was, "Why Don't Get Drunk and Screw" became this huge jukebox hit. And I thought, my God, this is it. I'm going to get to buy a Boston Whaler or something, you know? A 13.6 with a 40. This was a long time ago. But the thing about it was, the mafia controlled the jukeboxes in those days, and they didn't pay royalties on a jukebox play.
That's true.
You've heard of the mafia?
Okay.
Yeah, I used to work for them. I never put that on a resume though. But anyway, that was the true thing about it. Is I never made a dime off of the jukebox play because they wouldn't pay you, and I wasn't going to ask. "Hey, Carlo, where's my fucking money?" Nope. So it just lived on as, and remember, this was a very risque song. This is before Flavo Flav and Snoop Lion but in Nashville, but everybody that I knew who was a performer loved it. So we're gonna do it. And it was, let's just say my producer was a little conservative at the time, and we had a few words about whether it would be on the album or not, because he said, "This could destroy your career." I said, "Why? I don't even have one yet. How can it destroy it? I mean, we don't have anything. This could make it, you know?" And so he just threw up his hands. I could be insistent if I wanted to. The great thing about it was I was insistent on having players in the band that I wanted, not players that they provided for me, and he was the first one that I wanted in that, and Burl Gretchen, and to Tommy Cogbell, and Sammy Creason,
Reggie
Young, to everybody who played on those first records before I ever had a band. I'm going to dedicate this song to them because those guys played for a living, and I'll never forget them cracking up when, I don't think we, it was the only song we didn't get in like one take because people were laughing so much. Let's have fun with it right here at the good old Casa Marina tonight, huh? Sitting here, your voice sounds so wonderful, but your face don't look too clear. Barmaid rang a pitcher, another round of brew. Hey, why don't we get drunk and screw? Why time at the media mile. What else are you gonna do in this town? And that is White Sport Coat and the Pink Crest Station. But this party is not over yet.
Hell yeah.
Did you hear that? Eight-time CMA winner just yelled, hell yeah. Have you had a part of a margarita?
It lasts a long time for me.
You're still feeling the effect of the partial margarita.
I'm giddy.
Well, when we do Margaritaville night, waste 10 away again on a partial margarita. I'll work on that, okay.